You're listening to Radio Aryan.
Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder, by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your...
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. The date is Thursday, July 25th, 2019. I'm Andy Donner, and you're listening to Radio Free Northwest.
For the blessed warming light, farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely croon, and the thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here today to talk to you all about white nationalism for grown-ups. To introduce the subject, I'm going to fill you in on something I've done with the role I've inherited here at the Northwest Front. Now, strictly speaking, we do not have titles because we are not a membership organization with a rank structure or other sort of hierarchy. Despite this fact, Harold would occasionally refer to himself as the General Secretary of the Northwest Front, and that's probably the best description of what I do. At other times, Harold would say he's the unofficial principal of Movement Junior High, and that particular title I am rejecting. I'm setting it down, and I'm not permitting anybody to pick it back up. We don't need it anymore, and if that's a problem, we might not need you. I'll explain what I mean in a moment. The particular incident I'm about to describe happened very shortly after Harold's death, and I've been sitting on it for this length of time since it really isn't important until we were able to clear a bunch of legal hurdles and proceed with party professionalization. This is, in fact, the first step of that party professionalization, and you're coming along whether or not you like it. Without going into the details, there are a series of conversations the white nationalist movement has among itself that we really don't need to keep repeating. Things like religion and general women-hating, actual misogyny, in fact, not this random, oh, you hurt my feelings nonsense. Anyway, on social media, somebody started something for no reason whatsoever, and it actually cost us a migrant and her husband. Believe it or not, they were on their way to come see us here in the Puget Sound area because they were actually going to move here and help us out. Unbeknownst to me, I'm actually the one that recruited this couple. They told me so, again on social media. Unfortunately, let's call them what they are, a shitposter decided to shitpost, and these people took umbrage at what was said. Both of these people were very much grown adults and knew how to act, but for whatever reason decided to misbehave, and this was all over about a 24-hour period where I hadn't checked social media. So I log in to an absolute mess that I can't make heads or tails of, and this is exacerbated by the fact that Gab back in the day was much harder to follow than it is now due to a number of, self-moderation features that didn't quirk out quite the way anyone wanted them to. Those of you that have used the platform will know what I mean. Anyway, this is the sort of conversation that 1, didn't need to be started, and 2, didn't need to be responded to, and 3, absolutely did not need to deteriorate into someone canceling their scouting trip that they were on at the time, simply because somebody who I have no control of on the internet pissed them off. And in precisely the same way, the person who pissed them off didn't need to post a useless religious argument or actual misogyny, the sort of which Harold has covered on this program repeatedly. And even then, he didn't need to keep going with an argument that had me pulled into this as if he was quoting some sort of official NF position, which she, on the other hand, should have known wasn't official NF position simply because Harold has said otherwise in the past. You might think this sort of item is a one-off, but it isn't. Another good example of this is a prominent female figure in the movement who has been very cross with me for well over 5 years now when I commented on something she said, saying I mildly disagreed. That was it. for the record, I actually respect the hell out of her. It's just a matter of that one thing she said I disagreed with. Again, I don't know where to go from there, but that sort of thing really needs to stop. There's an especially interesting story of another white nationalist I met prior to coming home, and he mentioned to me a number of times that he always had a strained relationship with Harold Covington simply because a few e-hangers-on to the Northwest Front wouldn't stop trolling him on the internet. I once asked Harold about that, and it turns out that the person doing the trolling was just that, a troll. It wasn't even the individual the troll claimed to be doing the trolling. That's all the more reason to just ignore this nonsense and not act like pitiful little children every time something like this happens. I'm saying that because I refuse to be the principal of Movement Junior High, and if somebody comes to me asking me to cast into outer darkness someone they just had a silly argument with, I might just boot both of them, because I do not need people that cannot tell when it's time to walk away from those conversations. I'm not discussing this subject solely because I'm annoyed at what happened, though I certainly am. Rather, I'm actually trying to make a point about maturity. As it turns out, maturity is something that's entirely up to each and every one of us at any point in time. And not just maturity, personal development and personal growth. Many years ago, there was a large NF dinner in the home of a family of supporters in Portland. One of the other guests was relaying an interesting conversation he had with some pseudo-racial hangabouts that were some of his friends and acquaintances. He had tried to get several of them, one in particular, interested in the Northwest Front. It wasn't going to happen, and it turns out that the issue was this specific person's personal development and racial political development. As this other comrade relayed the story at dinner, what this came down to is this other person's insistence that, quote, they just weren't there yet, unquote. And that always rubbed me the wrong way. Obviously, there was a perfectly reasonable comrade making some attempt at helping another new, well, pseudo-white nationalist grow, and they just weren't going to have any. That's irritating enough, but what's more irritating about it is the obvious implication that this other person was simply going through the motions until they felt like going full white nationalist. That's outright wrong. And yes, I do mean that. It's absolutely wrong for someone who's coming along in their political understanding to avoid going full white nationalist, even when they are fully well aware themselves that's where they're headed. This is actually a very common phenomenon, and I've run across it multiple times in up-and-coming YouTube channels. I've been sent a number of YouTube items, both recently and over the last couple of years, of various types of white YouTubers becoming more and more politically right as time goes on, and what strikes me is that several of them have been from all segments of society, men, women, white-collar, blue-collar, some professional political commentators, others political hobbyists. And eventually they all come around to the understanding that, well, they're not really trying to save Western civilization because that whole civic nationalism thing is a joke, and they outright say so. I'm always happy to see this sort of thing happen, but at the same time I'm always wary, because eventually, unless these people go out and out white nationalist, they always end up backtracking and saying, well, it's okay to have some non-whites in society, or some sexual deviance as long as they're not in your face, or they may even go so far, like one video I've seen, where the commentator outright says, identity politics are dumb. And this is after, well after, in fact, they've abandoned civic nationalism because they understand demographics matter. I won't be so predictable as to say, well, there's the white character problem for you, and I really don't think this is as general as the deliberate and willful refusal to understand that Harold taught us about. I think there's something more specific going on here, and it's worth analyzing. As I said, there's a maturity issue here, but let's see if I can't do better. The first example I brought up was somebody playing games with white nationalism and someone thinking everything was about them such that they were obligated to respond to an obvious games player with the highest level of offense they were capable of mustering. Neither one of those is good, but it's not nearly as clear-cut as the case of the person being discussed at the dinner party, as well as these YouTube commentators who simply can't be bothered to just out and out say white nationalism instead of Western civilization. You'll note I'm not naming names. I don't want to distract from what I'm trying to say by bringing up personalities that people could then argue about. And really, I'm not trying to rag on them. I would rather just use the behavior in question for what it is, Anyway, when Comrade Don Welke was alive, the HQ group would frequently discuss YouTubers we were interested in following, and one such YouTuber would frequently draw Don's ire simply because this guy would never say white people or white nationalism. He would always just hem and haw about Western civilization, like lots of other formerly civic nationalist YouTubers. And I admit this drives me a bit nuts because they know what demography is and they know that demographics are destiny, but why? Why not just say white people? You've already kicked civic nationalism to the curb. What's there to gain? Everybody knows what you're talking about. But anyway, what I'm trying to say here is this. The idea that you can pussyfoot around whatever stage of learning you're at simply because you enjoy being there, at the expense of getting where you know you need to go, especially to full-blown white nationalism and acting on it, is wrong. And it's self-centered, and you're doing it solely because you think this white nationalism thing is for you and about you. We've got to stop that, because that type of thinking is what forces us into the sort of system politics thinking whereby we'll be happy if the system just works for us. And really, we know what's going on there. Okay, I've rambled enough about this subject, so I'm going to stop. Before I do that, though, I will drag myself kicking and screaming back to the theme. White nationalism for grown-ups. A grown-up would not randomly troll strangers on the internet just because they feel like making silly comments. A grown-up would not respond to that troll by getting so offended that they cancel their own Northwest migration. A grown-up would certainly not meander around whatever they find interesting about their personal stage of development when they know for a fact, and their admissions tell me they know this for a fact, that something more important is going on down the road. They would get down the road as quickly as possible and act according to their new knowledge. There's no other option forward for white people but the Northwest Imperative and the Butler Plan. And a bunch of movement junior high personalities are not going to get that job done. So grow up, become mature, productive adults, and participate in the only viable plan to implement the 14 words.
Westbound and down, 18 wheels are rolling. Are we gonna do what they say can be done? We've got a long way to go, and a short time to get there. I'm westbound just like a bandit run. If you put hard on the pedal, some never mind it breaks. Let it all hang out, cause we gotta run the base.
Greetings, comrades. This is the trucker coming at you from eastern Montana. Been running back and forth across the states, delivering food products to all your hungry bellies. Now that it's the beginning of July, out here in Washington anyway, new gun laws have taken effect. No matter whether you have a concealed pistol license or not, there is a 10-day wait for handguns, and you also have a 10-day wait if you want to buy an assault weapon. Yes, I'm really thrilled about that. Those evil Ruger 10-22s. Anything that's semi-automatic, like a three-shot bird gun, is now classified as a semi-automatic or an assault weapon. So you have to go and get the police or sheriff's approval to buy it during that 10-day waiting period. Plus, if you buy one of those evil assault weapons, you have to go through a training program. Not sure what the hell training programs consists of. It's a Ruger 10-22. But, hey, that'll go and keep us all safe. Like the Mukilteo shooter here a couple of years back that stole the weapon from a family member and went on a shooting spree. Oh, yeah, that worked out well. That 10-day waiting period would have helped out a whole lot for that one, along with any other criminal activities where they go out and steal the gun. Oh, that's right. They have a storage law wrapped in with it, too. I don't know how that's going to work. Criminals don't obey laws. They don't go through background checks. They'll just go and steal the guns. Yeah, that works out well. So, if you're going to be coming out to this part of the homeland here in Washington State, make sure you have your weapons ahead of time. That way they're not on the radar. So when these laws don't work and they institute registration, they don't know that you have them. Hey, that's a real good idea. Yep, go and get your guns out of state, bring them in from out of state, and that should at least throw a damper on their search for those evil guns. Yeah, anyway, you can tell that I'm full of sarcasm and kind of pissed off because of this crap. Why the hell should I go through a training program? I mean, hell, I was in the military, did have weapons training and all that kind of crap, so... Well, this is my little gun rant for today, so... Well, have a good one there, comrades. Stay safe. Watch out for those little Antifa bastards. If you're going to be in the Portland area and stuff, make sure you stay away from them little shits, because now they are carrying around what looks like milkshakes, but they actually have quick-setting concrete in them so they can go and make it look like they've got drinks and go and assault you with quick-setting concrete in milkshake cups. Another good reason to be armed, so you can drop them little bastards in their tracks when they go and start hurling chunks of concrete at you. Anyway, okay, well, this is the trucker, signing off from yet another rant out here on the road. Greetings, comrades. This is the trucker coming at you from Idaho Falls, Idaho. It's currently a little after midnight. Just got done taking a shower here at the Loves. Not that you'd give a crap, but... It was a glorious day coming into the homeland today, coming across Montana. Started off there in eastern Montana. It was nice and sunny and lovely weather. Not too much traffic coming through the edge of Yellowstone Park and West Yellowstone and down through Ashton, Idaho. And when I pulled in here, it was in the mid to upper 80s, I guess. Right now it's about 47% humidity and it's cooled off to 67 degrees here. Like I say, a little after midnight. It's just a gorgeous day in the homeland here in the neighborhood. Not sure why you all are dragging your feet. You need to make a scouting trip. Come on out here. It's a nice part of the country. Not too many people. I know I did hit a bunch of backup there on US 191 and US 20 coming out of West Yellowstone, but that was because they were painting new lines on the highway there, so there was a couple of miles worth of traffic backed up behind the paint truck. But other than that, not much traffic. Everybody was being nice and courteous. Did see some buffalo as I was coming out of Belgrade, Montana. A lot of little young buffalo, don't want to know what they're called, but referred to as kits or whatever. But yep, there was a few little ones running around there, so fortunately didn't see any deer today. And stuff. Hate it when them suckers jump out in front of the truck. They kind of mess up the bodywork a little bit, make life a little bit of a pain. But yeah, they got a lot of that stuff here. If you're into hunting, into fishing, this is a great part of the homeland for that. A lot of mountains. This time of year, there's a lot of people out there fly fishing in the river, doing rafting trips. Saw a bunch of people out there on a horseback trip and all that. So yeah, take your vacation. Make your scouting trip. Come do some of this neat stuff out here. You might enjoy it. You might end up liking it and moving out here. All right. Well, this is the trucker signing off from Idaho Falls, Idaho. Have a good one, comrades, and I hope to see you out there on the road making your scouting trip and your migration real soon.
They say, can you know? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch a bandit run.
Greetings, everyone. This is Comrade Jason. The trucker's rant against the further restrictions of our freedoms is one I think we can all relate to. As America has become less and less white, this has been the overall course of many of the liberties that whites gifted to the world and used to be able to take for granted in America. In the 1960s, natural freedom of association was effectively ended in America by the so-called Civil Rights Act of 1964, which outlawed racial segregation in public accommodations such as bars and restaurants. And in hiring, that abysmal law, along with others like the ridiculously named 1968 Fair Housing Act, also attacked our property rights and freedom to contract. What is fair in any way about an oppressive government saying a white property owner cannot protect his property and future income by deciding not to rent to troublesome deadbeat blacks? Freedom of speech is under constant attack in the present day because the feelings of inferior races are coming to be considered more important than a white man's essential right to speak freely to his fellow man for the protection of his society. And non-whites, who in large part cannot be trusted with firearms, are entirely willing to vote that right away from whites who can. All of this illustrates a fundamental aspect of all multiracial societies and nations. In an environment naturally conducive to inevitable racial conflict, individual liberties come to be increasingly violated and eliminated in a vain and hopeless effort to keep the peace. The attack on the white man's fundamental natural and social liberties is just as big a reason as the destruction of his safety and social life, and the risk to his property, arguing against all forms of multiracialism. If we are to live free, we must live white, and only white. There is no other option. Thanks, Trucker, for another good illustration of that.
Good evening, comrades. Tonight I'm going to be discussing a book of poems entitled The Nazi Disillusion by Christoph von Kenwitzberg. The author justifies the term Nazi in this title by discussing the interpretation by Miguel Sereno that the word Nazi is related to the word ignition. The author argues that National Socialism is the predecessor of Nazism, but the terms national and socialist have no meaning anymore. After all, nations barely exist these days, and socialism is often confused with the left. This work is very critical of white nationalism. White nationalists are viewed by this author as being filled with negative emotions, deeds, and outcomes. The author notes that white nationalists are, in fact, very passionate, but they unfortunately have nothing in the way of productive output. And I have to say that this criticism resonates with me. The term nationalist is connected with the word for nature and also the word for natal. And nationalists often talk about how they are guided by nature. But the author notes that in raw nature, it is often the most numerous who tend to win out. On the other hand, a lot of national socialists tended to look to artificial selection, and so they look to the mountain of eugenics. However, the author notes that eugenics is currently in a ruin. And at this point, the author seems to want to speak of transcending the material realm. That having been said, I can't imagine that anyone seriously would consider abandoning all consideration of eugenics. That is just too unbelievable to me. However, people often speak of abandoning or transcending the material realm when the world is considered hopeless. A lot of people in the mainstream, of course, would look at this book and claim that it is a book of white supremacy, when in fact it is highly critical of white people in general. In fact, one of the very last poems in the book is about the destiny of the Germans and how all other whites are questionable. This is when I'm assuming the book comes into some allegory, because it talks about this fable of the hollow earth, and I'm assuming that no one really believes such a fable. However, it did seem to come into some popularity a few years back. At any rate, this book talks about how the Germans were called into a material existence from this hollow earth in order to fight the Demiurge. And then they were followed into material existence by the slave race called the Sumerians. At some point, as the Germans came into this material world, some of them mixed with this slave race, and the formation of that became the Indo-Europeans. So the pure Germans used a counterclockwise swastika at this point, and the Indo-Europeans used the reverse. This mixed nature of these Indo-Europeans, which is actually what most, of course, white people are, they became susceptible to the Jews who were rebelling their position as a kind of slave race. The author talks about how the first Rome was really in Germany, and even talks about the stars actually reflecting lights within the earth. The author talks about how there's this hope still in the world for a great cataclysm in which there are really very few survivors and there is a kind of new earth coming about. So there's a kind of Ragnarok, or you might even compare it actually to the belief of Jehovah's Witnesses that there's going to be this earthly paradise coming about, but only a very few are going to be selected to enjoy it. At this point, of course, the Übermensch will come about and the deities will no longer be needed and they'll go into a kind of retirement. Because there's no other alternatives to this, everything else is going to fade away. And people who are activists will have to realize that this world is but an illusion. And so any disillusions are going to fall away. And hence that's where we get the title for this book. In this book, there's also advice about being convincing and how convinced people are the ones who are truly convincing, of course, and how if you understand the illusion of the world and understand the need for self-discipline, that these storms are going to be ultimately weathered. But the author is very honest about talking about how this type of identification is greatly challenging and how dispossessed anyone associating with this worldview is going to feel in the current reality. One of the books that is very much mentioned within this book of poetry is Carl Jung's book, Third Reich Pilgrim. This book apparently is available but is extremely expensive, and I've looked for it online and there does seem to be a place where it would theoretically be available online, but I can't seem to actually get that download, which is kind of a long story. That is a book that I would ideally like to read, but I don't know that I'm going to quite be able to. At any rate, I hope you enjoyed this discussion, and of course there is another book by this author, von Kenwartsberg, that I spoke of some months back. I would recommend work by this author. So thank you very much for listening. Have a good evening, and hail victory, comrades.
Thank you, Gretchen. An excellent review, as always. For my main segment this week, I want to bring you a discussion that I mentioned the last time I was on RFN over a month ago, on achieving mastery of our rhetoric in our intellectual and social battle with the anti-white enemy. In this battle, we are fighting over the minds of those remaining whites who have not been co-opted into becoming racially weak lapdogs of the enemy, by our enemy's anti-white, anti-racist lunacy of the modern day, and we are fighting for the fertile minds of our youth, many of whom naturally develop a need to go against prevailing social orthodoxy as they mature into adults in their own right. Since it is the enemy who now controls that social orthodoxy, this phenomenon of youthful rebellion now works in our favor, and we need to position ourselves to make the most of it. One of the ways that we can do that is for each one of us to be prepared to strike with concentrated racial truths to counteract modern racial lies whenever we are afforded the opportunity. The most basic thing necessary for advanced living is to have a rational response to what is true about the world in which we live. Imagining the races to be equal and treating them as such is an obvious violation of this. All evidence shows that blacks and browns are far less intelligent subspecies of humanity, and so it is fundamentally irrational to treat them as our equals or to expect them to perform as our equals. Likewise, teaching them that they are our equals does nothing but breed envy, resentment, and hostility against us when they naturally, inevitably fail to measure up to the standards of white society or perform on a par with us. Engendering this built-in social hatred purposefully against our own people by ordering and managing society according to lies like non-existent racial equality is socially insane, and as we see around us constantly today, nothing good at all has come of it. We have to fight social lies like the lie of racial equality that go against all reason and attack the fundamentals of ordered, peaceful white society. So, if each of us is going to do his part in the important work we have ahead of us, we all need to know and have absolute mastery over what I will call the racist basics, and we need to be able to talk the racist basics with conviction, confidence, and authority. Confidence in anything comes from expertise and long practice. So if you are not now, you need to become an expert in racial argument, and you need to practice speaking and writing from that body of knowledge. So let's get into it. What are the racist basics? Well, what you determine to be your minimal core set of racist basics will overlap with mine, but they will not be exactly the same. It is natural that certain data, facts, anecdotes, and arguments will be more meaningful and powerful to you than to me, and vice versa. We will all have our favorites that we break out first and most often when presented with the chance to educate others. But whatever your basics end up becoming, know them and be able to communicate them expertly and without hesitation or uncertainty. Become expert at wielding your racist basics as the rhetorical weapon of the political soldiers that our race needs us to be. By way of guidance, however, I would say you need to be able to articulate why the white race is special, why white civilization is special, why whites have every right to preserve themselves and the civilization that they created for themselves and their children, why other races are completely unneeded by us, why certain races are wildly inferior and undesirable, and why diversity and race mixing, even with the better races, is likewise undesirable and, in fact, intolerable. You need to be able to talk about IQ, to quickly give the average IQs of the major races, and explain the environmental reasons why they biologically evolved that way. Explain how the races are different in criminality and character, why race is biological and real and not just a social construct, why any amount of racial diversity is undesirable in white society and will eventually lead to bad results. If you were to be given the assignment to sit down and write a 500-word essay about why diversity sucks and should be fought, you should be able to do it. And such an essay would be comprised of almost your entire list of racist basics. But your knowledge of the racist basics should be extensive enough to support writing at least a 500-word essay. Every one of us is a foot soldier on the rhetorical and propaganda battlefield. Your knowledge is next to useless if you don't transmit it to others or can't. The use of rhetoric and developing the courage to speak are skills of the white political soldier, which every one of you listening to my voice should aspire to become. Some of you will do more with it than others, and that is fine. But if you are racially awake and aware, you have the ability to make a difference in the white struggle for the future. And the most basic thing you can do, the most basic responsibility you can meet, is to at least be able to talk a good game. Talk is cheap, as they say, and this is true. Talk is the cheapest thing you can do. So in my mind, each one of us had better at least do that and learn to do it well. So by way of assisting new people especially, I'm going to just lay out some of the most important things I've learned over the years that serve as my own set of racist basics for the benefit you may gain from them and the use you may be able to make of them. Let's just get into it. First off, since it is basically responsible for everything about humanity in all its forms, let's discuss the Darwinian explanation for specialization and speciation in the animal kingdom, of which human beings are, of course, a part. Charles Darwin's seminal and groundbreaking work, On the Origin of Species, published in 1859, finally gifted the world with the understanding of the workings of natural selection in nature. Since that work was published, the processes of natural selection have been observed and recorded in operation everywhere in the world. Today, we know that life forms on Earth change over time due to many factors, one of which is the effect of random genetic mutations caused by the cosmic rays constantly bombarding the Earth and the low-level background radiation of the planet, which is always present as well and is caused by radioactive ores in the Earth's crust. The laws of genetics and epigenetics mean that traits of parents are passed down to the offspring, including these mutations. Also passed down to offspring are the changes that are due to natural selection, as theorized by Darwin and confirmed by experimental observation since his time. Anyway, all of this is by way of background to get to a fundamentally simple and elegant idea, which is that the various races of the Earth were made different by nature through the processes of natural selection that adapted them for survival in the specific environmental conditions of the regions of the Earth in which they evolved. The dark-skinned blacks and browns evolved with more melanin in the skin, which protected them from the more intense solar rays of the lower latitudes of the Earth. Orientals and whites evolved with light skin because we are both northern peoples, where the sun's rays are much more diffuse, and this was not something we needed to survive and thrive. What we did need in the north was smarter, better brains, which allowed us to think abstractly and to plan for our survival through months-long stretches of deadly cold northern weather, conditions which are not present farther south on the Earth. Whites and Orientals who did not have the intelligence to plan to survive the winter, or were too aggressive and antisocial to get along with others, were cast out of human social groups to die alone in the cold northern wilderness, and their biological influence on the future was cut off. Thus, whites and Asians were naturally selected for higher intelligence and adapted for lower levels of social conflict, while blacks and browns of the Earth's equatorial regions were not. Most white people, even though they know full well that whites are smarter and create more harmonious, lower conflict societies, have never been allowed to hear this explanation of why. It is suppressed in society as a whole, but as a loyal and aware white racial patriot, you need to be one of the ones who is able to bring this all-important understanding to your fellow man. The same is true for these other basic racial truths, which I will now go through in a little bit quicker form. Intelligence. Whites, Orientals, and Jews have more of it and enough to create advanced civilizations. The dark races have far less of it and not enough, on average, to create or even maintain advanced civilization. So do you know the average IQs of the various races on the Earth? You should. If you don't, then learn them now and remember them. The white-created science of psychometrics has been used to measure intelligence for over 100 years, and the results have always been the same. It has been found that we can usefully measure intelligence, and no intelligence test ever devised has ever shown that the various races of mankind are even close to one another in intelligence. The exact opposite has always been shown, that the races have widely varying IQs. The average IQs of the various races are approximately as follows. For some Jews, particularly Ashkenazi, about 110, perhaps a little higher. North Asians, which means Chinks, Koreans, and Japanese, about 105. Whites, 100 to 103. Browns of almost any kind, about 89, which includes Pacific Islanders, South Asians, Middle Easterners, and Central American Indians, usually known in the United States as Hispanics. American blacks, which are about 20% mulattoes, and therefore enhanced with white DNA and ancestry, their average IQ is about 84 or 85. Sub-Saharan blacks, however, without white ancestry, have an average IQ of about 70. In some places in Africa, maybe as high as 75. Australian Aborigines are the least intelligent race on the entire planet, with an average IQ of about 60 to 65. Studies suggest that a population needs an average IQ of about 95 to create or maintain what we would consider to be advanced civilization of a type that has its own internal ability to progress and improve standards of living beyond a rudimentary technological level. So as you see, no dark race on the planet has that ability. And we see this reflected in the societies that they create every place in the world where they exist. Crime. Blacks commit murder at 8 to 9 times the rate whites do, browns at 3.5 times the white rate, and North Asians at about half the rate of whites. Blacks commit interracial assaults and murders against whites at 25 times the rate that whites do so against blacks. Blacks commit simple assault at 50 times the rate of whites. It is entirely reasonable and completely justified to be more wary and suspicious of blacks and browns when it comes to crime and victimization. Most importantly for our young women, a white woman is 11 times more likely to be physically abused or murdered by her romantic partner or spouse if she chooses a black over a man of her own race. Our daughters, nieces, and their friends simply must be taught this truth in order to counter the never-ending anti-white race-mixing propaganda put into almost every product of Hollywood today. Physiology. In proportion to the body, blacks have smaller brains than whites, and black brains have a lower density of neurons. They also have fewer folds in the surface of the brain, which means less brain surface area, and again, fewer neurons. Smaller size, fewer surface folds, and a lower neuron density mean a less capable brain, and these are the physical differences that account for the observed lower intelligence of the African Negro. Testosterone is the hormone responsible for male aggression, and blacks have more of it than whites. Lower IQ in blacks lowers their capacity for abstract thought, which is essential to the ability to plan and to foresee the future consequences of their actions. Abstract thinking is also necessary for empathy, which is the ability to imagine yourself in another's place and to feel what they feel. And so the lesser capacity for abstract thought in blacks also lowers their ability to empathize with other people, namely anyone against whom they commit their crimes. So, put simply, blacks are far more criminal than whites because of the combination of high testosterone and low IQ. This is also the combination that leads to the low impulse control of blacks, which has been thoroughly documented by many studies within the social sciences. Poor impulse control and heightened aggression are characteristic of the race. Blacks know this themselves, which makes it all the stupider that ridiculous white liberals continually try to deny these kinds of obvious racial differences. The Boondocks was a black-created animated show popular with niggers a few years back, which had its own take on it. Blacks apparently have their own phrase for what we call the chimp out, or sometimes TNB, which most of you will know stands for typical nigger behavior. The Boondocks called it the nigga moment, and this phenomenon of the race is so well known it was featured in an early episode of the very first season of the show.
Watch where you walking, nigga.
Hey, what you say, nigga?
Watch closely. You're about to experience a nigga moment. Webster defines the nigga moment as a moment when ignorance overwhelms the mind of an otherwise logical Negro male.
What did you say, bitch, nigga? Hey, squeeze it, nigga!
Causing him to act in an illogical, self-destructive manner, i.e., like a nigga. Nigga moments are unpredictable.
Hey, wait, man, wait. This is stupid.
Hey, you right, dawg. Look, let's put the guns away and go on about our business.
Freeze!
But they all end up bad. If they had their own category, nigga moments would be the third leading killer of black men behind pork chops and FEMA. It's a fact. Now let's see how a nigga moment affects a white man.
Trick.
Watch where you walking, bitch!
What did you... Wait a minute. I'm white.
Where you going? Don't you ignore me. This is a perfectly good moment to throw your life away.
So that's funny stuff. But as we all know, comedy must be rooted in truth. Otherwise, we feel no real connection to it. With blacks, TNB, or the chimp out, is rooted in truth. And even they know it. Civilizational achievement. Whites conquered the world and created the modern world in our own image. Whites can fly to the moon anytime that we want, while blacks can't even feed themselves in their own countries without outside help. North Asians, namely the Japanese, had completely adopted and mastered the white man's technology barely 50 years after their closed society was forcibly opened by the cannons of Commodore Perry's naval squadrons in the mid-19th century. They caught up to us very rapidly because they were naturally capable of doing so once they had us to follow. In comparison, the blacks of Africa, who have had contact with the white man for over 500 years since the Dutch explorers first moved down the coast of Africa in the 15th century, remain backward and utterly dependent on the rest of the world to this day. Sub-Saharan African blacks never invented the wheel or any written language or literature. They never created any multi-story buildings. They never discovered Madagascar, which lies just 300 miles off the African coast. Madagascar was discovered and settled by Southeast Asians from around Indonesia from over 5,000 miles away instead. African blacks never found it. None of this speaks of equality between the races in any way. One of the really dumb things that has come up in the modern foolishness about race is the tendency to try to say that race is not biological and therefore not real. That it is somehow a social construct. Really stupid things are said, such as, there is only one race, the human race. Okay, to get at this idiot argument is not particularly difficult. The word race, when applied to humans, is a synonym for the word breed as applied to cats or dogs. When they say the human race, there is no human race. There is a human species, and the races are breeds or subspecies. You have to explain this to people, that it is an intellectual and lexical fraud to use the word race in place of the word species. Saying that there is only one race, the human race, is equivalent to saying there is only one breed, the dog breed. It makes no sense whatsoever and is obviously stupid. As to the notion that race is socially constructed, all crime show dramas are based upon the well-known fact that the races or the subspecies of mankind can readily be determined by the remains left at a murder scene. It's called the science of forensics. So this whole notion of race being a social construct is incredibly stupid, and it just goes to show the ridiculous childishness of our modern society that so many otherwise intelligent white people feel emotionally conditioned to honor such a stupid concept. You should be able to easily dismantle that with the things I've just said. So one of the main arguments that you should ultimately be working toward to explain to people and to highlight is this simple statement. Whites do not need non-whites for anything at all. There is not one thing that whites are unable to do that we magically become able to do when non-whites are added. Whites have proven themselves to have the greatest capacity for civilizational progress of any race. And that means there is nothing to be discovered or invented that will not eventually be discovered or invented by the white race entirely on our own. What this means is that the white future loses nothing at all if non-whites are excluded entirely, and we need not worry about missing out on any supposed quote-unquote contributions from non-whites. Conversely, the white future actually gains immensely if non-whites are excluded, because no racial diversity means no racial societal extortion, like the current call for reparations among blacks in America. Another powerful phrase that you need to remember is that racial conflict only comes from racial diversity, and racial diversity always brings racial conflict. So you may see how this works. Since whites do not need non-whites for anything, all racial conflict is completely unnecessary for whites to put up with. The racial conflict that is the unavoidable result of multiracialism and diversity obviously causes great social harm. And causing harm unnecessarily is fundamentally immoral. Since diversity and the racial conflict it causes are both unnecessary for whites, forcing racial integration onto whites who do not want it and do not choose it causes unnecessary harm and is therefore fundamentally an immoral act. Forced racial diversity is completely fundamentally immoral. Modern anti-racist American society is fundamentally immoral. And this is a message that we need to spread. Our people are taught, however, that the more anti-racist a society is, the more moral it is, which, as I have just shown, is absolutely backwards. This awful anti-white society must be delegitimized in the eyes of our people if it is to be overcome. just as the Jews' takeover of America flowed from their success in delegitimizing the idea of whites holding exclusive social power for our own benefit in our own civilization, and undermined a white-focused society overall, our number one task is to delegitimize the anti-white society they have substituted in its place. To do this, we have to wield the propaganda weapon with superior skill and intellectually and rhetorically abuse, vilify, and wreck their society in precisely the same way they did to ours. And then make it stick. No reversals this next go-around. Modern white nationalists are the intellectual vanguard of a new era of white existence in which white men and women will no longer be allowed to grow up ignorant of the realities of race and, as a consequence, made vulnerable to absurd lies about racial equality that undermine and destroy the foundations of white society. You are a part of this intellectual vanguard. And as such, every person listening to this broadcast needs to be able to defend racism as natural, normal, and healthy, and as a good and useful thing. Only a racist will act to defend a race, because that is important only to a so-called racist. When blacks, browns of all kinds, Asians, and Jews defend their own kind, they do so on a racial basis, which is, by definition, racist. And our position is that this is perfectly okay. And it's perfectly okay for whites to do the same. Whites have racial interests too, and you need to be able to say so with conviction, and to defend our right to pursue our racial interests just like everyone else does. You may only get one chance with any particular person to have a meaningful conversation about racial truths, to counteract the racial lies they are surrounded by in society every other moment of their lives. Most people avoid conversations about race like the plague. If you are lucky enough to get an opening, especially if it's with someone you care about, you need to be ready for that chance and not be left futzing around for the points you need to make in the moment. If you realize that you don't have complete mastery of a tight set of facts and arguments to make the case for white separatism and white nationalism, you can use what I have given you in this show. But make yourself a standard script to talk about the essentials of race. However you do it, you need to know your racist basics backwards and forwards, and this is the key. The words actually have to leave your mouth and go into the ears of other people. Know what needs to be said and actually say it. I hope this episode has inspired you to hone your rhetorical weapons you have at your disposal. Until the time comes when we are truly backed all the way into the corner, and no option is left to us but to pick up real weapons to defend our survival as a race, we must use our superior ability to think and communicate with the weapons of the rhetoric of white resistance to fight the enemy in all corners of our society. Do whatever is necessary to give yourself the best intellectual advantage for that fight. Thanks for listening, comrades, and we'll have more for you next time. Have a great week.
Radio Free Northwest is brought to you by the Northwest Front, P.O. Box 2188, Bremerton, Washington, 98310. You can visit the party on our website at www.northwestfront.org. Until next week, hail victory. Oh, what glorious pride and sorrow!